This program is brought to you by PrideNZ.com.
Everyone, and welcome to this wonderful evening. You've just actually been welcomed by Te Whanawhana, one of Wellington's hidden treasures. Thank you, Kevin and Te Whanawhana. Today is International Human Rights Day, and we sit this evening with incredible sadness in this country. So I want to take a moment and acknowledge the tragedy that has occurred on White Island. Our thoughts go to those who have lost loved ones and those who have loved ones in hospital, to the emergency service people who, it sounds like, did incredible things yesterday rescuing people. But I also want to think about what's happening in the South Island and weather-related events. And what's going on across the Tasman with our family in Australia and the terrible bushfires over there. And also what's going on in Samoa with the measles epidemic. So it's an important day-to-day human rights, thinking about it, and the complexity and the intersectional with real life. My name is Marnie Bruce Mitchell. I'm the current one of two people who represent ILGA Oceania, a human rights and LGBT human rights organisation in the Pacific. So it's my, I know say little Kevin's asked me to talk about myself, so I'm an intersex person, I'm a non-binary person, and I'm a queer person. And in the context of tonight with our coming out stories, I came out to my parents 40 years ago, and like lots of the stories of that era, it didn't go well. Both my parents burst into tears. They saw me being a queer person as a tragedy. And I think tonight we'll experience a little bit of the same of that, and I think we'll have some narratives that are quite different in terms of where planet Earth is now. So a great pleasure to invite Mira to the stage, the ambassador for the Netherlands, who is hosting this very, very special function tonight, Mira. Please welcome.
Let's go. Whakatau Whakatau mai ai.
Welcome all, and really thank you very much first to Kevin and the group from Tivavana Trust for your beautiful performance and your participation in this event tonight. I'm indeed the Netherlands ambassador to New Zealand. I'm standing here in a very, like, if I'm going to do something technical, but this has nothing to do with me, but this is in fact, like, it will be recorded and I stand here, but I want you to not feel any distance except of this computer screen. I would like to thank, of course, Mani also for the introduction, and of course Mani and Kevin are the co-hosts tonight. We are co-hosting. This event on this very important topic on the 10th of December, International Human Rights Day. And I would like to thank also very much also Councillor Fleur Fitzsimmons, who was so kind today to tell her personal story and share that with you. And I really hope that also there will be some participation from the room later onwards, and Tony Duder as well, who is also willing to share a personal story, which is, I think, very crucial for the topic that we discuss today. It's not about, like, technical human rights issues, about something that's far away from everyone. No, it's about, in fact, like, living and real human beings who struggle in a situation where sometimes, like, the state is not accepting the rights of all people, but it's sometimes also a community. And we will see that later today, of course, in the documentary. I have the privilege, and I just wanted to highlight that before I also say something about Human Rights Day, but I had the privilege to work already with Kevin and Mani around the ILGA World Conference in March 2019, which was a huge success, especially also by your tireless efforts to make and to be really inclusive in the organization of the conference, especially in facilitating the participation of a lot of LGBTI participants from Oceania, like from far away, like Pacific, who have never ever attended international conferences, who had no opportunity to share their stories and their experiences with other activists from all around the world. And I think that that was very specific on this particular conference in Wellington, that that was made possible, and that I think is very important to cherish. And I'm very happy That also there will be later on a conference, a regional conference later this year in Oceania, in New Caledonia. And I really would like to call upon, and that's what we do also as the Dutch embassy, to include as many participants from all around the Pacific to be there. The event tonight is because marking the International Human Rights Day. I mean, on this day, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was adopted in the General Assembly in New York. This document was a milestone at that time, and it was shortly after World War II, and promotion and the protection of human rights was on everyone's like mind. We really have to do something that this tragedy will never, ever happen again. But unfortunately, it remains as relevant as in 1948 as in 2019, actually. Without the declaration, we would not been able to hold countries accountable in their responsibility and commitment to protect human rights. It triggered many binding treaties, but put the human being central and not the state. Unfortunately, so signs of disrespect of human rights are proliferating, and there's still a great need to rally forces in defense of them. Next year, the United Nations will celebrate its 75th anniversary, and it will launch a number of debates, but one also a global conversation about the role of global cooperation in building the future that we want. And I would really encourage everyone to really think about this. We are all here in a very crucial moment, and I think, of course, Mani also highlighted some of the current day tragedies, but also in many other countries in the world, there is still hunger, war, serious human rights violations, and we can be part of also building a better future in that respect. This was also one of the reasons that the Dutch embassy hosted an event earlier this year, which was focusing on the future of human rights, a debate which is currently, I think, a big topic also in my own country. Like, how can we make it more alive? How can we bring human rights back into the conversation again and not in a discussion that people try to undermine it and undermine their relevance? However, it takes more than a declaration to ensure that the world in which human rights are respected. That's also a reason why the Netherlands is actively, together with a number of nations, and I'm very happy that I see my friends also of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade of New Zealand here, and we work a lot together with like-minded nations like New Zealand to improve human rights treaties, to ensure that we have special mechanisms, such as the UN Special Envoy, who's dealing with the discrimination and violence against LGBTI community or discrimination on the basis of gender identity. And these kind of mechanisms are really important to highlight what is happening, what human beings everywhere around the world experience, and that countries also are have to respond to questions of other nations to what is happening, that reports will be written about the situation and discussed also in the United Nations. Again, this is not tonight about an abstract matter. The film highlights real people and the serious challenges and the social inclusion LGBTI plus rainbow people still face in today's world, in many countries. The documentary, you will also see later tonight, tells also the story of three families living in three different countries, and the dilemmas and the challenges they face with the coming out of their son or daughter. They discuss how they found out, and they share their feelings or of shock sometimes, not understanding what is going on, fear, but also worry about their children, about maybe safety and maybe discrimination that they will face, but also about the community that they come from and their religion. Although the situation of many of LGBTI rainbow are much better in countries like New Zealand and the Netherlands, there are still a number of issues in countries like my own. Discrimination and violence remain a great concern, and many of our young people and young adults face social exclusion and bullying, which often leads to depression, self-harm, or even suicide. 3 years ago, I lost a very dear friend and colleague. He had a nice job, many friends, but he felt extremely lonely by having parents who were not able to accept him. On his burial, nobody talked about his sexual orientation, which was so crucial of his own person. I think that this is something, a struggle that we all, and there are many stories to be told in this respect, that we still have to work on together to start a dialogue, because it's not easy, but we can make a difference. And this is, I think, also where this documentary is all about. It's not easy. A lot of people will not always say things that you might like, but it are also real people, and we need to start a conversation and make lives of people and better, safer, and promote social acceptance and well-being of everyone. I really hope that that will encourage, that the movie actually really encourages this debate, and look forward to also, of course, the stories of Councillor Fitzsimmons and Tony. And I wish you a very inspiring evening. And I also would like to highlight that we have, maybe you have seen them already, two blue Delft, blue kissing boys or girls. You can just figure what it is. It's a bit nondescript puppet. But what is for us very important is that we, I think that some of you have seen them already. They were at the ILGA conference. They were also at my King's Day reception. And what I really would like to ask you is that to make a picture, to make a photo and share them on social media, also with the sign that you promote equal human rights of all. With this message, I would like to conclude and wish you a very inspiring evening.
Kia ora tātai. Tuatahi, me mihi atu ki a koe, Ambassador. Thanks to the Ambassador for opening this event today. And it's going to be an event which is, we're going to encourage you to keep some of the thoughts that the Ambassador has mentioned, because we're also going to have a bit of a talk, as our Ambassador has alluded to, with some of our guests that we've invited along today. But again, I want to add to the welcome to that Marnie has extended, also a welcome from myself to all the people that are here. I've got my short-range glasses on, so I can't see anybody past the third row, but you're very welcome. Thank you for coming. The format really is... And I'll invite Councillor Fleur Fitzsimmons to come and take a seat, please. Councillor Fleur Fitzsimmons is a Wellington City Councillor for the Pai Kawakawa Southern Ward of the city, a role she has held since 2017. Now, Fleur has a background in the student and union movements as a leader, lawyer, and activist, so we're really, really pleased that she's able, as a public figure, to participate in this event. Now, the way that this is going to work is essentially we're going to ask a couple of questions that might prompt some responses in terms of a parent's experience to coming out. And so the first question is... Really, was there a coming out experience for you? I should have checked that first of all.
Well, just before I start, I just wanted to really acknowledge Marnie and Kevin and Meryl Waldberg, the ambassador from the Netherlands, for putting on this event, because human rights, as many of the people here will know, are very delicate things. They're not granted by states, they are won by people and they are kept alive by people. And it's events like this all around the world which actually keep human rights alive and which are very, very important. So thank you for putting on the event, but also thank you everyone for coming. Because even just by being here, you're involved in exercising and defending human rights, and that's a very noble thing to be involved in doing. And thank you so much for coming tonight and for putting on this event. And I also just wanted to start, so I've got a transgender son. He is age 8, I must get that right, 8 and a half. His name's Eli, and it's interesting you asked the question about was there a coming out, because Eli, when he was about 3, would say, "I a boy, I a boy." So he actually knew he was a boy before he knew the correct grammar. and to be honest, we just initially, his father and I just initially thought that he just idolises his big brother Zach, and he wants to be a boy like Zach, and he's a tomboy. He just doesn't want me to always be brushing his hair and brushing the knots through, because that's horrible. We made all sorts of excuses, but when we took Eli to have his haircut short for the first time and stopped dressing him in ridiculous girls' skirts and clothes that were particularly gendered, we noticed a massive shift in him as a child, and a real new comfort. And this probably is not news to lots of people in this room, but just a new comfort and confidence, even as a 3-year-old. And it's been, ever since then really, just a lovely journey of a child, growing up and developing in the ways that I've also experienced with our other 3 children. So yeah, it's a quite gentle and pleasant coming out experience, I think.
This is one of those RuPaul type of questions that I copied from the show. If you could return to the time when your child declared who they were, what would you say to yourself based on your experience?
Don't grieve that you're losing a child, because that's kind of how we felt, and I feel a little bit ashamed of that, but we did genuinely feel like we'd had a daughter, and she had a name which was a favourite name of mine for many, many years that I'd been saving up to give a daughter, and then we didn't, and we did feel a sense of grief, and I genuinely don't feel comfortable that was our emotion, but it was, and we've quickly moved on, and we no longer feel that sense of grief at all. In fact, this very time last year, I was in Newtown Hospital having our 4th child, so it's a lot more pleasant to be here than being in labour, I have to say. But the lovely thing about when I had Kate is that our whole family were like, well, she's a girl now, but who knows? Which actually the midwives were quite surprised by, but I thought it was quite a lovely journey for a family who we don't assume gender roles now. And our 2-year-old Rosa has started saying, "I think I a boy, I think I a boy," and which Eli is very, very excited by and very keen to encourage. But so I think it's changed our whole family's notion of gender and the attitudes to gender.
Did you have any fears?
Yeah, look, we've had like many people in this room will know, a number of things that we've come across that are issues to be dealt with. For example, swimming at school is something that has been a concern and a worry and has caused some anxiety. Gendered toilets at school were also a real issue at the beginning. Running in the cross country, because the school, for some unknown reason, divided the cross country into boys and girls. But actually what we've found is that there is a community of transgender parents within this Island Bay school, which is where Eli goes, and other parents we've taken a lead on some things and they've taken a lead on other things. So for Eli, cross country and sport is very important. So we talked to the teachers about that, and it was remarkably easy to get that changed. And I think the reason for that is because of the work of many people in this room, including Marnie and many others across the world, that has made a situation where I, as a parent, go to the school and say, My child's not that comfortable with this boys and girls cross-country thing. Can we address this? And the teachers are like, oh, yes, it's absolutely right. It's ridiculous. And that is because of the work over years and years and years of activism and campaigns. And, you know, that the movement has made it easier for me as a parent and will be for my child and, you know, for more children in the future. And I think that's very exciting.
So a pretty tough question next. With this, and I'll just call it coming out process, whatever it should be called, I'm not too sure, but with this process, what would your message be to parents or rainbow people who live in repressive communities? What message should our government or Wellington City send to those people?
Well, I mean, I think probably everyone in this room would have a very good answer on that question. I don't pretend to be an expert on that, but I know from my own activism and work in the student movement and the women's movement that you have to expect more and you have to expect better. And if you don't get it, you have to demand it and you have to keep going until you do get it. And if it's easier for you to do that in a group or on behalf of others or, you know, in a way which is less intimidating and takes steps step by step, then, you know, that's the way to do it. We are concerned about Eli suffering from bullying at school, and so far the best line that we've come up with, which works at 8 but won't work at 18, is that if people tease Eli will say back to them, "You want to be careful. You sound a lot like Donald Trump, and you do not want to sound like Donald Trump." And children know, universally, at Island Bay School anyway, that Donald Trump is bad. And so far that's worked, but I appreciate that that won't work, forever. And actually, I'm working with Marnie on a project which the government set up to reduce the barriers to changing your registered sex on birth certificates, and Marnie and I are both on that group. And the lovely thing about talking about that group to Eli is that I've said to him, because he kind of can know and understand it, that Jacinda has set up this group and this is what it's going to be about. And every time we have a meeting, I come home and tell him about it, and he just has a renewed sense of energy and excitement and happiness. And I just think that's so important, and the rewards are, yeah, so meaningful. And I know that each of you will have had experiences like those when you've, achieved change.
Fleur, thank you so much. Symbolically, I have Ruth and Doug sitting here listening as well. My mum would struggle, but I think you've given something that my dad would take away and digest and think about, and he'd be pragmatic and go, you know, we can do this. Like, this might not be easy, and I think it's a beautiful gift that you give to all of us, but an inspirational message to parents that this is possible. And the story, I'm sure there'll be people sitting here listening, kind of crying inside, just imagining what it would be like to have parents who can see you as a 3-year-old and honour what is in front of you. So thank you. Thank you so much.
The other thing I wanted to talk about was coming out as a... is an experience which is not just about sexual orientation, which is the examples that we've seen tonight in the documentary, but it's also about gender, you know, how you identify, how you express yourself. It's also about intersex. And within that range, there are a whole, you know, number of other ways that might be particular experiences in terms of coming out. And so I do want you to think about that for the conclusion of this evening, because we would like you to, and we haven't figured it out yet, get some feedback from you, both as an audience and later when we have food and drink after this event here. But for this particular moment, I'd like to introduce you to Tony Duda. Now, Tony is a lesbian, takatāpu activist, who has worked in the rainbow community since 2013 as the 2ICN Communications Manager at Rainbow Youth. And she recently moved from Auckland to Wellington, and straight away we snapped her up to say, Tony, would you like to participate in this event? And so the what we're looking at now is really just to get a perspective from a youth in terms of something that they might be able to pass on in terms of this event tonight. And so similar questions, just a slight different direction. So in terms of the coming out experience for you, and I'm thinking, did you have one? And for you and your parents, how was it? How did it feel? What was it like for you?
Cool. Kia ora koutou, ko Tony Toka Ingoa. Good question. I guess for me, and it's really odd because I feel like I never actually said the words, and I've never actually come out, which is hilarious that I'm sitting here today. I go to one Te Whana Whana training and I'm like, anything you need, Kevin, anything Te Whana Whana needs, I'll do. And he's like, wow. I was like, oh. But I guess I come from a really small town in Northland. I'm very far from home, called Dargaville. It's the kumara capital of the country. We make kumara vodka, just FYI. It's disgusting. But I grew up in a really white, middle-class, rural upbringing. And I didn't have any clue what gay, lesbian, let alone trans, intersex, non-binary, any of that was. But I knew I was different. and I begged my mum to not send me to the local high school, and I sort of said to her, like, I don't think I would survive there. But I didn't really know what I meant by that. All I know was that I meant something really quite drastic. And she kind of got the message without even knowing what I actually meant, and managed to convince my dad, who was the one with the... I was very lucky to be able to be sent to boarding school in Auckland. And it was in Auckland that I sort of realised that I had attraction to people of my own gender. And I pursued that, and my girlfriend at the time, her parents actually went to the boarding school director and told them that I was corrupting their daughter, and that I was actually sexually assaulting her, so I got called into the office, and sort of, when you walked into the boarding school after school, there was a notice board, and it had, you used to get your name written up there. Sorry, I'm taking for ages. You used to get your name written up there, and if you were going to get a parcel, and so my name was up there, and I was like, oh my God, my mum sent my vanilla Coke. Like I'm so excited because, you know, we didn't. And anyway, I get close to the board, and it says, can you see so-and-so, and in the office. And so I went in there and she sat down. I sat down and she just said to me, okay, so you're a lesbian. I've called your mother and she's coming down tomorrow for a meeting with me and the principal and your dean. And I didn't even know that I was a lesbian at that point. I don't actually remember the meeting, but my mum does. And she just said that it was a whole lot of women sitting in front of me and saying, we've never had this in 70 years of this, and debating whether or not to expel me. And my mum was scared to drive on the motorway, let alone confront someone like, you know. So she just sat there, I use this fondly, country bumpkin, just being like, I don't know what to say to these people. And eventually they decided not to kick me out, which, thanks. but they decided to separate me from the rest of the girls in my year. So I was given a... really nice room, actually, in the boarding school. It was the prefect's room, and so it had a door that locked, and it had like all of the, because we only had curtains in our dorm. I was 14 or 15, and it meant that I got, you know, all the perks of being a prefect, but I was just a lesbian, so that was that was pretty awesome, to be honest. So yeah, that's my story. And my mum told everyone else in my family. Yeah.
And how did your mum react?
My mum was terrified for me. She said, and my parents had split up when I was 2.5, so her and my dad never had a good relationship, but she knew that she had to tell him because he was very emotionally stunted. I mean, he's like cis white middle class dude from a rural town. That should say everything you need to know. But my mum said to me, once she got over the shock and once she asked me if I was worried that men wouldn't find me attractive, which I was like, I don't want them to. Like, that's the goal. She said, you're going to meet the most amazing people. And she was talking about drag queens, which, yes, they're amazing. They're amazing. But actually having worked in the community and having travelled and represented my work, but also just my communities, she was right, and I thank her every single day for saying that, because I like, and I thank, you know, my communities, and thank you guys for giving me that this opportunity. So yeah, that's it. I'll stop rambling.
I just want to know, how did she know that we were fabulous people?
She guessed based on the drag queen she'd met, apparently, in the 70s in Auckland.
I guess it's a bit of a tricky question, and it, you know, that RuPaul question, but you know, if you went back to that time,
yeah.
Do you think you, what would you say to yourself and give your advice to yourself back then?
I would say to not worry about being a normal gay person, to focus on being an activist, because actually you are very privileged in what you, in your community, and there are people who aren't, and you need to realise that real quick and do the mahi and for them. And I would say don't be scared. And that was the biggest thing, and still is the biggest thing, about going home and talking to my family, is not that I'm a lesbian, but that I'm an out lesbian who goes on the news, well, used to go on the news as part of my role, and like was a professional gay person and unashamedly speaking about it. And not only that, but speaking about other things, speaking about being Māori, speaking about being an ally to trans people and non-binary people and intersex people. That's all very uncomfortable. So not being a good gay, you know, that's what I would say to my younger self.
Wow.
And also that the L word is problematic. I didn't know that. The L word. Kevin just goes, what show is problematic?
So let's think about it. So what would you say to that person sitting out in rural New Zealand now?
As in the parent or the queer person?
No.
Kia kaha. And I think... yeah, just do whatever you can and what makes you feel good, and try to remember that every coming out is different and it's okay to take it slow. And, you know, I think our if you can find a safe online space, go there, because that's what helped me as well, you know. I wrote a lot of fan fiction and found my people. So, yeah, that's what I would say.
Are there support groups out there?
Oh, don't make me do this spiel. Yes, there are support groups out there. Yeah. So, do you want me to...
Yes.
Okay, so what do we have? We have Inside Out, we have Rainbow Youth, we have Outline, we have ITANS. Oh, God. I've taken my Rainbow Youth hat off. I don't do this anymore. Te Whana Whana as well, yeah. So there's so much out there and you can go online.
What about for parents, do you?
Yeah, the biggest thing I would say to parents is don't be scared. Can I swear? No, probably not. No,
you can swear.
Okay, don't be scared to fuck up, because your fear clogs you up and your silence says, I don't accept you. Just don't be scared. Just all you have to do is love your kid, I think. And just support them with whatever they want. I think it's as simple as that, and I think we keep trying to overcomplicate it, but actually that's what it comes down to.
So what, I think you've just given the message to the third question which I had, which was really, you know, what would your message be to people who live in repressive communities? Don't be scared, is it?
Well, it's really interesting, because having travelled and had the privilege to be in international settings, hearing people who are from places like Russia and Kenya and Indonesia, actually I don't have a lot to say to them, except what can we do to help you? And I would say to the governments like New Zealand government, You know, it's important that you connect with the local activists in those areas who are doing the work and find out what's going to help them, what's not going to endanger them, what's not going to set back the work that they're already doing. It's listen to the people on the ground in those countries because they have the answers. And, yeah, that's what I would say.
Tony, thank you. Thank you for what you have shared, for bringing a little bit of your story to tonight. I think it sits alongside beautifully what we've heard from the others. Thank you, Tony.